This is CliffCentral.com.
Hello, and yo. Welcome to the Gas Comedy Podcast.
Yo, what's happening?
So if you were listening to last week's show, Dusty Rich, our host with the most, said he was feeling a little bit ill and that he was coming down with the starting of Ebola.
He's not yet today.
We're not saying anything, but do the math.
I think Ebola's on the cards.
I can still hear music in my headphones. Is that...
There we go.
Have you got a backtrack? Can our listeners?
That's blazing. All five of you.
Well, they don't pay us. They'd be the worst customers ever. Okay, so this is Farhan Isat. Who have we got in studio today?
In studio today, we've got the Oom Duff, Uncle Eric Janssen. I am here. And we have another guest.
And our guest, so even though Dusty wasn't here, he was good enough, being the loving, caring, generous being that he is,
to give us another
He
Dusty.
Sent us another Dusty, but instead of a Dusty with the Y, it's a Dusty with an I. So there is an I in Dusty.
There's a Dusty, Dustin. Well, Dusty's a Y, I'm Dustin. Together we are a Dustity.
Dustity. That's lovely. What's your full name?
Dustin Moore.
And Dustin Moore, for those that don't know, is a new up-and-coming stand-up comedian on the scene.
100%.
And he's also ginger.
Yeah.
So and it's Friday the
13th. I don't know why we needed to throw that in.
Well, you always
radio,
throw that out so on your set. It's like one of the big parts. I think it's important to push your brand as well. Welcome to the show, everybody. If you're listening to us live, you're probably listening to us on cliffcentral.com or on the Cliff Central app. You can always download us as a podcast and listen to us in your own convenience. And if you are listening live, you please get in touch with us on Twitter at cliffcentral.com. Or at Gas Comedy. And WeChat as well. It's Cliff Central on WeChat.
Yeah. Get us there. Also, you can reach us on www.gascomedy.co.za. Subscribe and we'll let you know about the gigs for the week. Also, get us on Facebook at Gas Comedy. Well, on Twitter at Gas Comedy. And facebook.com/Gas Comedy as well. We will give you gigs. We will show you the things. And yeah, we'll make it amazing, man.
Yeah, and also we send out a weekly newsletter, so you can actually subscribe. Yes, you can either do that via the website, gascomedy.co.za, or drop us a mail,
yeah, you can do that as well.
Where,
Eric? That's info at gascomedy. Sorry, man.
How do I get the
info
newsletter?
Info at gascomedy.
Have you subscribed?
No, I'm going to do that.
Well, that's why you don't get it.
No, you see, I said how, not why.
You go to, email us at info@gascomedy.co.za, then we'll mail you.
Cool. So coming up on today's show, we've got a really special show. We've got some really, really amazing, fresh comedy content, stuff that literally came out this week. So it's hot off, I don't know if the press is the right word, but it's hot.
Hot off the platforms.
And today we are merging Comeducation and the Industrious Bastards. And the theme today we're talking about is becoming a stand-up comedian.
So how, why, what, who, all
when,
the things,
where,
everything,
all of that good stuff.
Teaching you.
We've got a very cool surprise comedian phone call, someone that actually just arrived in the country yesterday and he is for a couple of days, so that's really exciting. Let's actually get into it and play our first joke. This was actually aired in the US on Wednesday night. And it's a French comedian, Gad Elmaleh. He's a French superstar comedian, and he was live on Conan. So here we go.
Thank you so much for the first time in America. It's great. Thank you so much. It's so good to be here. Yeah, I'm from France. Every time I say to Americans I'm from France, I don't know why they come up with random weird comments. Like, oh, you're from France. Actually, last year, my cousin went to Italy. I don't know what to tell them, right? That's another country, right? I just started to do stand-up in English. I don't actually really speak English. I just memorized the whole stand-up act. So everything I say is scripted, right? Even the fact that I'm telling you that everything is scripted is actually scripted. It works well unless I start to talk to the audience. Last night in a club, I was talking to a guy and a girl sitting front row. And I said, how long have you been together? He said, she's my sister. I was like, so is the sex still good? I don't know. It's scripted, everything, right? I just moved to New York City. Great city. I went to see the Statue of Liberty. For the first time, never seen it before, I wanted to see live the gift we gave to you. We didn't know what to get you guys, you know. We were like, they have everything. They're Americans, you know. And then we were trying to come up with ideas. What about, I don't know, healthcare? No, they won't like it. What about free education? No. Oh, I have, oh, a big statue. Yeah. Yeah, America. Oh, they're going to love it. Yeah, yeah, it's going to be great. And we built it in France, right? And made it in France and shipped it to America. Amazon Prime. And you guys received an email from Amazon 1 week later saying people who bought this also like the Eiffel Tower. New York is great. Just a little difficult to get an apartment, especially when you're not American, you know. The broker asked me for 9 letters of recommendation. I don't even know 9 people in America. So I said to her, can you be one of those people? You, maybe my Uber driver or someone. And then I remembered I had a cousin in Brooklyn. I called up my mother in France. I said, should I call him? She said, no, he's old and schizophrenic. I said, great, more people. It's great to be here in L.A., and I'm single, right? Yeah, I know how you feel, yeah. Because you're not. But, yeah, I'm single, so I've been texting a lot of American girls. It's great. I don't know if I'm getting too old or what, but I don't get the new emojis in the text. I don't get those. Like, I was texting this girl last night. I said, what about a drink right after the show tomorrow night? She said, why not? And then Spanish dancer, handbag, 2 buildings, a glass of champagne, firecracker, a cab, monkey covering his face, and eggplant. I didn't know what to do. I sent her back an ambulance. Wait, she responded, sounds like a plan. Thank you guys, you've been great. Thank you so much.
Ah, shit, that's blazing.
Yes,
that's
what did you guys think?
It was good, eh?
That was brilliant.
You can tell. So he's like a French superstar comedian. And look how he's killing in a second language. That's
amazing, that's man. That's cool. That's what I feel like I want to be one day with, like, Vanek.
Oh, yeah, tell us, because you're studying
Learning Zulu, yeah. It's not going well because I've been lazy as hell. But it's getting there. I'm gonna be serious about it starting Monday.
So tell us, yeah, give us a bit.
No, there's nothing. Like, I haven't read... What do you mean, tell you a joke? You I haven't learned what my Jeez, man, that, I just learned that to get.
Jesus, that's advanced.
Wow. Calm down, man. I just learned the greetings and stuff.
So,
man.
What's the greeting? Give us.
No, I'm not going to do the greeting.
Don't be
that's
shy.
Embarrassing. Oh, it's embarrassing. I am shy.
You have a hickey. Shy. Like, that's
not too shy.
We're going to tweet a photo of Eric.
No, you're not going to tweet a photo. Fuck off.
We have to. That's
your first one, right?
Oh, shit.
You got to tell her she's applying suction to the wrong part of your body there, Eric. Come on.
I said, because it's his first one and he's so proud, like, instead of trying to hide it, he's trying to make it obvious, like, draw a circle around it with arrows.
He was
going to
wear a collar shirt and he was like, no. People must know.
He's wearing the deepest V-neck possible.
Fuck both of you. That's not right.
See when you greeted me, like, pulled the Napoleon look so you could see and admire.
Well, you know when you move away from the microphone, we can't actually hear.
Oh,
what
sorry, apologies. I was doing the Napoleon move. Myself.
That's,
yes,
that's so like how you committed to so me. So yeah, man. Like one day when I learn Zulu properly, I'm gonna do the thing. I'll even come in here.
So why? I mean, obviously you could choose any language. Why Zulu specifically?
It's the most.
Trying to like get those NC gigs, aren't you?
Yeah, that's the thing, man. You know, it's the number one Vanak spoken language in the country because it's like spoken nearly everywhere. So I mean, and if you can understand,
is it really the number one Vanak? Isn't English Vanak as well?
Well, apart from English, and I know what you're doing. Yeah, you're using the land as jokes. This is wrong. This is horrible. You must give the land back, and then Zulu, and
why
then Afrikaans, and then
good. Like,
yeah.
I'm now avoiding eye contact.
Yeah, I know he's like shit. I've got land. Yeah. So yeah, man, cool. But like that's dope, man. French comedian killing it in America. That's
very
amazing,
cool.
Man. That's
all right,
amazing.
So let's get right to it. So Comeducation and the Industrious Bastards. Today we said we're talking about becoming a stand-up comedian. So we're really talking about the ins and outs of where to start, how to start, what you'll have to go through to basically enter the strange world that is stand-up comedy in South Africa. So this is really for any aspiring comedians out there and folks that really want to know more about the inner workings of this mysterious comedy industry. And I know the guys are relatively new, so they can share a lot of insights around what it entails, how to do it, what kind of person you have to be, the hours, the pay, or the lack thereof, yeah, the paying of dues, and basically a lot of the prep involved. So let's maybe start with our guest. Yeah, let's start with our guest, because Dusty, so how long have you been doing stand-up comedy for?
8.5 months now, man.
Eight and a half months.
You wouldn't tell, though. Hey?
How many days, how many minutes, how many hours, how many minutes?
Because I know
you've been like on stage for an hour now. No, it's...
So it's 8.5 months.
Yeah, 8.5 months.
So you're almost about to give birth to your child. Your
basically, we're there, we're there. Baby. We're like, it's about to...
You're
about
looking
to
good, though. I must say, you're glowing. That explains.
Thanks, man.
Okay. And where was the first time you performed?
It was at Parker's in Krugersdorp.
Oh, that was the Silver Star.
Oh, Silver Star.
Yeah.
How did it go your first time?
Yeah, well, you know, I think it went well. People clapped. I think we came on and went off. So, okay. that's good.
That's good. And then, obviously, prior to going on stage, you had some sort of idea or image, perhaps, in your head of what you thought it would be like. How did the actual experience, like, while you were on stage, match up?
Completely differently. Right, right. I think, I don't know if it was the same for you. You got this idea, like you said, you watched other people, then you do it. But your whole thinking changes after that on how to deliver a joke. Because before that, you're drawing on these random jokes you've heard on throughout your life, you know?
Right.
And then you got to go and do it. And then some of them, it's like, you know? Hey?
So, sorry, and are you still doing some of the stuff that you did on your first gig?
Not a chance. And you?
Like, you look back, and now you go, ugh. Like, I heard that.
That's it's like getting a hickey. You kind of grow out of it.
Oh, shit.
Well, some of us are still
experiencing. I'm not going to say anything.
I said some of us. We're in the same boat.
We're in the same boat. So
not in the same boat.
You in the luxury liner. I'm still in a dinghy. I'm still needing to apply. But anyway, man.
Where was your first time?
My first time was actually at the Box.
That's a cool spot.
Eric, where was your first time?
First time was Parker's Gold Reef, actually.
Wow, that's
Parker's
nice.
Gold Reef.
Yeah, before
so both of you have Joe to thank for breaking your comedy virginity. Mine was Jason Goliath. He smashed it. Like, it was very cool. And then in terms of your first set, how did you prepare for that? And how did you... Tell us all about it. Like, what... Okay, let's
break it down.
Why did you decide that you wanted to get on stage?
So I'd always wanted to be a comedian. I mean, I watched my first show when I was 12, Mark Banks. And I remember his last joke, and I thought that would be cool to do that. You know what I mean?
What was his last joke?
It was about... I can't even remember it properly, but he was in Port Elizabeth because I grew up in PE, and he said, I've been reading the news, and apparently you guys must be careful in traffic because someone gets knocked over by a car every 5 minutes.
Joke.
I don't know who the guy is, but I feel really sorry for him.
He's getting really pissed off now.
Oh, that's that joke.
That shit is funny.
For a 12-year-old, that is like amazing, right? Because everyone's laughing, so that's why you get in.
And then you're like, because it's not different people. It's the same guy.
And you go to school the next day, you're like, this is a
you
funny
try to tell the kids, and they're just like, no. Shitty delivery. Like, you fumbled over the punchline.
Spoke too close to the mic. Ruined it.
Okay, so that was it. So that was, you said at age 12, you're now 65. So, like, what happened between. Sorry, no.
Age that well, eh? Why was that even funny?
Because you were ginger.
Why are you
clapping? That's why. Carry on.
So how old are you? I mean, have you changed age between? Now, obviously, we've aged by 8.5 months from when you started comedy. How old were you when you actually got on stage?
27. So I was a late bloomer.
So it was 15 years. Man, so you've had a 15-year head start on people. So, yeah?
Yeah.
Like 15 years?
15 years is good. That's probably the age of the girl that gave Eric his hickey.
Shit.
If she's listening, shout out to Eric.
I like how I'm taking shots here and I didn't even do anything.
Yeah. Look, there's always a fall guy.
Yeah, fuck it. It's always me.
It's always you.
Always me.
So then the trick is to bring in someone like lower. Then we'll then divert it to them, you see?
It's not going to happen, though. It's still going to end up on me. But anyway, get back to the thing.
So then, I think the first time you what you do is you mail Parker's Club, and then they say to you in June, you got a gig in August. So you just kind of ignore it for a few weeks or whatever. And then a week before, you got to kind of go and say, look, I've got to make jokes. So you start chatting to mates. And I remember saying something funny in an office once. So I used that joke and you try to come up with a set, but it failed because my first joke was like, hi, because it was an Afrikaans audience. So I was going to say I'm a Sharks fan, but everyone just thought I was nervous and I was saying hello 7 times. So you learn lessons, man.
Right. And then, so did you actually sit down and prepare? Did you write the set?
No, you just write points. And points. Because
obviously there's different types of comedians, guys that write out word for word, and then other guys that just...
Yeah.
Put bullet points. And then other guys that just freestyle.
Fuck it, I'm gonna go. Yeah. But
it's hard. I think it's scary your first time. I don't know how scary it was for you, but I remember going through, like, what are the scariest things I've done?
Yeah.
And then comedy was the number one, man. That
did
was
you sleep that night after your performance? Did you sleep easily?
No, I was buzzed. Yeah. And I got really drunk beforehand, eh?
Oh, really?
Like, yeah.
Wow, okay. Yeah. Was that because of nerves, perhaps?
Yeah. You know what happened is that I wasn't going to drink. And then when they offer you something, you're like, well, okay, I'll take it. Because, I mean, you're shaking. Or I was, at
yeah,
least.
Yeah, yeah. I remember, because I was drinking excessive amounts of water. I probably smashed like 2 liters of water within the space of 2 hours. And I remember just kept on running to the bathroom. And even while I got, just before they introduced me on stage, I was like, I need the bathroom. So I'm like, well, let me just go do this, get through it so I can go to the bathroom. So it kind of worked in
so
a way.
So quick set. Why did you drink water? Was the
oh, it was nerves as well. Like, and then like, you know, the throat getting dry.
Yeah.
And then I remember, because I was on in the second half. I was opening the second half back then. And I remember like in the break, I felt like I went completely blank. And I remember a comedian, Muzi Dlamini, coming up to me, and he's
shout
like, have
Muzi.
You forgotten? Yeah, shout out to Muzi. And he was like, you've forgotten your set, haven't you? And
oh,
I'm like,
no.
Yeah. And he goes, don't worry, that happens. But it was really cool, actually. The first time for me was very much that light was just so bright. I remember that.
At the box. At yeah, the box. You can't even see the audience.
And yeah, literally you see like the front two rows.
That's it.
And I remember it was a corded microphone back then.
At the time,
yeah. And I remember I kept playing with the microphone cable.
That's a sign of nerves, yeah.
Yeah, and then the stage was made up of like two halves, and the cable got caught, I remember, at one point in between.
Oh, shit.
So I'm fumbling for that. I remember having to pull out my paper with my bullet points twice. And I remember the second time I actually made a joke about it and got a nice laugh. But I did 12 minutes for my first set.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was supposed to do 5.
They didn't ring the bell. Eric wasn't.
No. Eric wasn't. Eric was still
was like,
in high school.
I was in high school, motherfucker.
Yeah. So that was December 2012, actually, yeah. What were you doing in December 2012?
I was in. You were fuck. That was the
year. You were doing long division. You were
black,
learning long division.
I got blackout drunk.
Story sounds.
Yeah.
That was the year I got blackout drunk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So mine was quite cool because I had met Jason Goliath a couple of years before that at the legendary Comedy Underground Cool Runnings in Melville. And time had passed. He then decided to do comedy, and then he started the box. And then when he saw me, he said, have you done comedy yet? And I was like, yeah, no, not yet, but I want to do it at some point. And for months, I'd been going to the box, and eventually I was like, listen, the last show is coming up in 2 weeks. I'm putting your name down. You've got 2 weeks, and prepare 5 minutes, come through. And he helped me out, and it was great.
Yeah, that's exciting, lovely, man.
So it was really good. So in a way, he broke my comedy virginity.
That, yeah.
Just putting that image out there.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking on. It's
Eric is getting very aroused, but
getting nervous as well.
No, man,
is that your arousal face or what face was
that? That was funny. I was about to laugh, but I can't laugh because I mean you said Joe Parker and then my comedy virginity. So and yours. So that's
luckily
even
not at the same time.
Oh,
your comedy
that would have been disgusting. But yeah, no, my first time was well. I was just like, yo, man, this is fucking nerve wracking because the day of the performance, I couldn't eat, I couldn't drink anything. I was just like nervous the whole day.
Cat Williams is like that, by the way. He says he doesn't eat. I remember watching a documentary, and he's like, he doesn't eat for like hours leading up to his show. He smashes a couple of whiskeys. I'm sure he smokes a bit of blunt. And then he goes on and does his thing.
That's blazing.
Yeah.
So anyway, sorry. Yeah. So like, I couldn't chow that all day. I was just nervous as fuck. I didn't know what I was going to do. You know, and then like an hour before I actually left for the gig, just sat down and was like, okay, what can I talk about?
Let's you did that an hour about. Before.
What?
You just on your own,
yeah. I was set an hour before I went on stage.
But surely, like, before that, you had, like, some ideas where you're like, oh, I could...
I had a book I had a book that I started when I was in grade 10, because that was, like, the first time I went to a live show. It was actually Trevor Noah's, I think it was... It's My Culture? What is the one just after Daywalker?
No, there was Lost... No.
But the one just after Daywalker was, like, the first live show that I saw, and then I was like, yo, this is blazing. I want to do something like this one day.
Not Daywalker 2?
Not Daywalker 2.
You remember?
The one just after. Just
and then
after,
he came out
after.
And he's like, well, if you bought the first one and you bought this one now.
Now you can just go and fund down it. Yeah, yeah. No. It was just after that. So then I saw Trevor and I was like, man, this is nice. I want to do something like this. So then I started. I had a hardcover book, 288-page book. And I just took this book and started writing a whole bunch of random shit in it. So I had all that going. And then I was just like, you know what? I don't know what to do from this list. Let me just pick...
Was it like journaling or were you actually writing comedy? Or at least to what you thought comedy was?
Yeah, I was just writing what I thought comedy was.
Yeah.
So I wrote a whole bunch of shit down and then I was like, okay, I'm going to leave this book because, I mean,
you
it's
know what
pointless.
You should probably do? You should probably go back and look at that notepad.
I have it. I've been using it, actually. Some of my funniest jokes are those jokes that I wrote back
that's
then.
Really?
The ones I'm doing now.
In that hour, that's brilliant.
I suppose to some extent it's because that stuff was pure. It was untainted because now you understand the technical workings of comedy. Whereas back then you're free, you're innocent.
You don't know what's going on. And yeah, so looked at some of the stuff and I was like, okay, well, fuck it. I'm not going to try and do racial shit or political shit. Let me just talk about my life. And then I picked like 5 points, like talking about crime and how bad crime is in Rehoboth, how often I get robbed, you know. And that's the actual set that went on to Comedy Central. That whole thing was pretty similar to my first set that I did with Bugs.
And that was that Grab the Mic.
Yeah, that was
Are
the
you
grab
doing
the
that
mic.
Again this year?
I don't know. I want to.
Dusty, are you doing that?
I don't think so.
I should
call you Dustin because then people go, why is Dusty doing Grab the Mic?
See, now you have to call me Dustin. Yeah.
But now tell us, you're actually doing something very interesting soon. Well, aside from going on holiday to Thailand, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. Like, are you actually planning on performing when you're there?
Once or twice. I mean, there's a comedy club I saw in Bangkok and Phuket, so I'll see. You know what I mean? Once you get there, you'll see what's happening on the comedy scene.
It's blazing. Maybe.
I mean, it would be lovely. Other than that, I thought I could host a ping pong show. So we'll see, you know.
Either way, it's going to get a reaction. Actually, what you want to do is you want to have one of those ping pong ladies, and every time your punchline lands, instead of a
and then she like shoots a dart, boop.
Because we heard, and I know we were talking about, I don't know if you spoke about it on the podcast, but we heard that Barry Hilton like spends a month at a time in Thailand.
Yeah.
And he performs at the hotel.
Yeah.
There's obviously a lot of foreigners.
And it's awesome because you've got a new crowd every week and stuff. So I think there's potential there.
Yeah.
But the big plan is to move to the UK for a bit to sort of do comedy there.
And what was your thinking around that? Like why, I mean, because let's be honest, because I think in South Africa, Johannesburg is probably one of... I'll probably say, if not the best place to get your stage grand just because of the number of gigs. I mean, it is a very saturated industry in terms of, especially like, as you said, to get on at Parkers, you had to phone in June, and you only got in August, so there's obviously that lead time.
So did
that form part of your thinking around going to the UK?
The
amount of stage time
you get? Yeah, so I mean, they do say you get more stage time in London, but it's just also experience, man, going overseas and playing to a different audience, an international audience. I guess it's the same as that French guy going to America. You know, you want to apply your trade, see if you can learn anything.
Yeah, and I think experiences in life lend itself to comedy, so the fact that you then travel overseas, when you come back, you can talk about what that experience 100%. Was like, so it fuels each other. And I think we see that with comedians as they get more prolific and more famous, where people are actually just wanting to know more and more about that person and their life.
Yeah.
I definitely saw that with Kevin Hart. I mean, a lot of the stuff he was 100%. Talking about, like going to a Starbucks, if most people spoke about that, like, yeah, whatever. But because
you want to know
him, I want to know what it's like for
what
Kevin
his
Hart
experience
to go to,
was
at to Starbucks. Go to Starbucks. Yeah.
And comedy is such a global skill, don't you think? I mean, it's something that you can transcend culture and go anywhere with. Why not do that?
Because humor is everywhere, man. Like, people are always trying to make you laugh. It's the easiest thing to do if you know how to do it.
Absolutely. Because I performed in Italy, actually. I had been doing comedy for about, I think I'd done like 4 or 5 gigs in my life. And I went to Italy. I spent a month there. I did one of those tours similar to Contiki. And I spoke to the tour guide, told him I was a comedian, and he was like, oh, cool, yeah, go up and do 5 minutes on the bus. It was like a luxury bus, had a microphone sound system.
Oh, damn.
And I died so bad. because because think about it, like, I'm new, and I'm not even language, because they were English speaking.
Oh, shit,
but I was doing material that was relevant to people in Southern Africa, and they going, we don't understand your references. But what I did was, after the 3-4 weeks that I was there, I had to convince him, and it was hard having seen me the first time.
Yeah.
But he let me do another 5-10 minutes, and I did only about the trip and things that we experienced.
Oh,
I
that's
absolutely
clever, yeah.
smashed. Till today, that's probably one of my highlights of my comedy career. So I think definitely comedy is so universal. Well, maybe we should say more worldly. I don't know if aliens
like just if that's how they laugh.
That's good. You can see you haven't really got into the full Zulu, because when I said aliens got into it, you're like, yeah, those Zimbabweans.
Well,
shout out to Xenophobia.
Shit. Yeah.
By the way, let's plug it. There's actually a very cool gig happening tonight. It's Friday the 13th of May. It's happening at the Lyric Theatre. It's called One Laugh. And it's basically an anti-xenophobia. They've got some guys, they've got Snooze from Malawi, Carl Joshua Ngube from Zimbabwe.
Yasin Barnes is coming through.
From Cape Town.
Yeah, Lisa Lindsay, Snooze.
Loisa Madinga.
And
the guy who's actually putting it together, the king of Christian comedy, Napoleon Masinga, a.k.a. The Napster.
Awesome.
Did you ever use Napster, by the way? That was the name of an app, a music sharing app.
Yeah.
Not me, man.
Not you, before your time.
No, I don't know if it's before my time. Before Eric's time.
No, I use
Napster.
You look more like a LimeWire kind of guy.
I don't know what LimeWire is. I use Napster.
All right, so we've just hit about 9:30. So, Duncan, let's play our track. So, again, I don't know. We've heard this past week about radio stations wanting to play 90%
local music.
And last week we debuted them, a band that I've recently turned on to, and Late Night Fox.
I said it was shit.
Yeah, it's that guy sitting over there. We can see him. So this is their track called Yuma Sekela. It doesn't actually feature Yuma Sekela, but here's Late Night Fox.
Yeah.
Yuma Sekela.
This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back. So that was Late Night Fox with
Yuma Sekela,
which you won't hear if you're listening to the podcast. So you should listen to us
Listen to us live.
And remember, if you are listening to us live, please get in touch with us. You can tweet us on Twitter at CliffCentral.com and or at Gas Comedy. And we're also on WeChat. WeChat at Cliff Central. What's happening? Duncan's pointing to a screen. Oh, there we go. Yeah, WeChat ID is Cliff Central. There we go.
Yep, and you can get us at on Twitter at Gas Comedy. You can get us on Facebook, also Gas Comedy. You can email us at info@gascomedy.co.za to get us to mail you the newsletter. And also, you can just subscribe, man. Go to www.gascomedy.co.za for your weekly comedy listing.
Or email. I've got you.
I did email. Email info at gascomedy.co.za. I plugged it first because I had to make sure. I nearly forgot. But
no,
you,
I've got your back. Yeah,
thank
I've you. Emailed.
Yeah, man. So yeah, like we were saying before the break, it's a really difficult thing to do. I mean, in terms of starting up, because sometimes you're not sure. It's not like an open book. It's not like applying for a job. You don't just start. Like, you don't just apply and be like, yo, I've got this much experience in telling jokes. Can I tell jokes at your place and then you pay me? That's not how it goes. There is a process behind it. So we are going to break down the process now, yes?
So actually, let's start with the first thing, because comedy isn't actually one of those things that you can go, like, a business degree or go, I want to be an accountant, let me go study that. You can't go, I want to be a comedian, let me study that. I mean, there are certain places in the world, like in America, they have an American Comedy Institute.
Yeah.
Or you can do comedy courses. But for the most part, comedy is something that people stumble upon.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah.
So it's something, yeah, you stumble upon, I guess. Well, you don't really stumble upon
a calling?
Stage.
Is it a calling?
So I'd say it's a calling. It's more a calling, yeah. You feel like this is where you belong, you know?
I feel like, Eric, you could have had two options. You could have either been a comedian or like an albino Sangoma, like with that calling.
Just because you guys are saying calling now, okay, yeah, I could have been, but shit is not lucrative. I think the term for albino Sangoma is fortune teller, just throwing it out.
But he doesn't know Vinak yet, so he can't
do
a Sangoma.
Yeah, I can't do this.
Oh. Then we might see a career change. Throw the bones and tell some jokes.
Careful, you guys are flipping.
He got me.
Right.
Ah, shit, that's fucked up. But yeah, I'll look into it.
Okay, so I don't know. I found personally when I got into comedy, or before that, I was watching a lot of comedy. And so I found what was very useful once I got on stage was going to watch shows and introducing myself and networking with the guys so that they would then put me on a future lineup.
Yeah.
So now you're very fresh to this. How have you been approaching in terms of getting gigs and finding out about gigs and doing that kind of stuff?
Man, that's actually one of the problems, I think, when you start, is you go to a place like Parker's. You can only put you on once every month or every second month. So you got to go find out and chat to other comedians. I found, where are the other gigs happening? Where can I get on stage? And it's a lot of the business principles apply to comedy as well. You got to network. You got to chat to people. You got to say, look, where are you going? Can I jump on? You don't ask, you don't get, you know? So I found that works. Yourself, Eric? I mean,
yeah,
how did you?
Pretty much the same thing. I mean, going, like you said, we started at Parker's. So obviously speaking to the guys and then finding out, like, yo, where do you guys go? Because I know you guys don't just do one club. You guys can't just be at Parker's. Where else do you go?
Yeah,
and the guy's
exactly.
Like, nah, man, every Tuesday night there's this place. Every Monday night there's this place. Every Wednesday night there's this place. Come through, speak to this guy, and he could put you on.
100%.
So then obviously you go to the gig, and then you speak to this guy that they told you to speak to. And you're like, yo, man, like Dusty, for example, told me to come here. And then, that's how it works.
No, you have to be like that. That's one thing. I mean, not to just punch your site, but it's one of the things Gas Comedy is doing so well as well. It's not just for the audience, but for comedians as well, to say, okay, where can I go? What gigs are happening?
Yeah, that's right, actually. It's very organic, actually, with the whole thing of stand-up comedy. It's not like a very institutionalized thing. It's starting to become a bit more as the circuit sort of grows. But it's very much, let me go find out where gigs are at. Let me go watch. Let me go meet the comedians. Let me get on stage. Let me perform. Oh, guys, like me, they invite you to do another gig
100%.
That they do. And it sort of gains momentum through that. Have you been paid yet?
I got paid officially from Feb, which was quite cool.
Nice.
I think it's always a milestone to get that first paid gig. And then from there, you're kind of more confident in yourself as well.
Right.
You're like, finally, someone's willing to pay me to talk nonsense for a few minutes.
as opposed to ping, need to stop.
Yeah, exactly. You just hear music. Okay, that's my time. You know.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I remember Jason telling me about it, and I did the same. I kept the first note that I ever got paid in, and I've kept.
Oh wow! You see, no one gave me that advice, Ferran. Yeah, where were you?
Gigging.
Obviously.
And then what do you think of this concept of having to pay your dues? What do you feel about that? Have you
had to pay your dues?
So when you, I mean, it depends what you think of dues, but like what, just doing stage time and working, and what do you mean by paying dues?
It's very open. I think you're spot on when you talk about stage time. Like,
so yeah, you got to pay your dues. I think you've got to respect the art, because you get to a point where you start thinking, okay, I'm good, and comedy will always put you back in your place, you know, especially when you're starting.
That's why I actually did comedy. I needed some humility in my life.
Man.
Okay, so maybe just more comedy then.
What are you trying to say, Doug? That's funny.
Well, pay your dues, and then I think work. I mean, Eric, you've done it. You're an example. You've worked really hard, and the success you've had, you deserve.
Yeah, obviously, because of working hard and, you know, constantly putting in the work. And the thing is, like you say, it humbles you really quickly. Because the minute you go on stage and you're like, yeah, fuck, I've got this shit. And then you go on and you proceed to die for 7 minutes straight. And the thing with death is, sometimes as a comedian, you think to yourself, well, if I'm dying now, like, maybe the last 2 minutes I could say something really funny and leave.
No.
And that's what people aim for. Like, I've seen people aim for this shit. I know I'm not one of them. I know if I'm dying at 3-4 minutes, I try and do my 5, or not even my 5, I stop at 4.5 and I bounce.
Yeah, we spoke about that. It's the theory of relativity in comedy, whereas if you're doing well, that 5 minutes feels like a minute.
Yes,
if you're doing badly, it feels like 50
hours.
So it really is part of that.
Yeah.
So now tell me now, obviously you guys are in it. What are you doing to keep pushing and keep growing aside from stage time? Like, how are you maneuvering that?
Well, with me, it's reading, writing, and learning, mainly.
100%.
So I read whatever I can get my hands on. Like I said, I'm learning the new language, so that's obviously a new avenue for me to dabble in. And
I guess it opens up a whole other world to you as well.
Yeah, it does.
Because it's not just the language, it's the culture.
It does.
It's the thinking.
And the understanding, man. Like, you're walking past people, like, you know, you're not eavesdropping, but you're walking past people and you're hearing their conversations. And then you start thinking, what made them talk about that?
Okay.
So now I'm starting to pick up on, like, vernacular conversations, and I'm like, that's funny.
Nuance.
And then I carry on, That's my.
And then your writing, how does that work? Do you write on paper? Do you write on a laptop? What do you do?
Phone and paper. Okay. So what happens is, normally I get an idea that goes on the phone. That's if I don't have paper with me. So then jot it down on the phone, and then when I get home, simply write it out, see where it goes. And then if I write the gag at that moment, it depends on how nice and fresh the idea is in my mind.
Nice. Now, I saw something that you, Dustin, you posted on your Instagram.
Yeah.
You took a screenshot of the word count feature on your Microsoft Word.
Yeah.
And you've written like an obscene amount. The reason actually why you're here is because Dusty like digs you. And then he goes, you're one of the hardest working guys that most of us know that's new on the circuit.
100%.
And so tell us a bit about that.
So I think that's also something. People say you've been in the industry for 8 months, but what have you done in that time? You know? So this year alone, I've written just over 24,000 words of comedy. So I think when people say it's hard
comedy,
work, that's my joke document, if you would. So it's a lot of hard work, and that's what I've been doing, man. Just, I think once you get your stage time, then you got to work on your content and you learn the theory of joke telling, you know, get to your punchline as quickly as you do all these things, because it's an art. It really is. And as much as it's about telling something funny, you can really enhance your joke by reading, learning, and putting in the work.
Yeah, so I think a lot of times people think maybe comedians might be lazy. You work for a couple of minutes or like an hour a day, whatever. Mm. But actually, what they see when they see us on stage is that tip of the iceberg.
Exactly.
Everything else that we're doing prior or before and after that, and then the after part is also important.
Yes.
Because I think with comedy, you prepare, you do the thing, and then after that, it's almost like you have to do a bit of a post-match analysis.
Boom. Exactly. And your brain's buzzing. I sometimes can't sleep till like 3 a.m. You the same.
Well, I used to be like that. Yeah. Like, I think now what I find post, like, performance is the best time to relook at it. Like, I may have said some things on stage, like ad lib or improv. Think about that, you know. And then what's also lovely with comedy, it's one of the few forms of work where you're getting that continuous feedback, the immediacy when you're performing, but also when you get off stage. Comedians see things that, because you're so close to your own material and your performance, you don't see.
Yeah.
And you get great feedback, you get add-ons, and it really just improves everything, actually.
Yeah,
it's really great.
It's like, I guess, watching a 100-meter sprinter. You see Usain Bolt, you think, and the difference is we look like we're having such a jam and it's chilling on stage, but you're quite right. There's a lot of work that goes behind it.
Yeah.
But it is rewarding.
So, yeah, that's paying your dues, making sure that your work is in order. What is the other thing? There was one more thing. One more thing. Money involved. Yes.
Hey, you've been paid as well.
Yeah, I've been paid.
You got paid in a milkshake at industry, right?
Yo, bro, that shit was blazing, though. That milkshake was amazing. Jeez.
I got paid in chicken wings.
Milkshake. I remember the first time I got a beer. I was like, wow, this is amazing. Give me a beer.
The weirdest thing is, though, I actually got paid, like, just after I started. By Kidibone. I don't know if many people can say they got paid by Kidibone because, you know, like the money exchange.
That's an insider joke.
It's insider. But yeah.
Shout out to Kidibone if you're listening.
Yeah.
Premium comedy.
Yeah, he
took us to Marula Sun.
He's never going to pay you again.
I know. Yeah. He's never paid me. So.
Oh, he took you to Marula Sun.
Yeah, he took us to Marula Sun.
That's
up like way near Garankuwa. And it's, yo man, like that gig was so weird and it was blazing because it was myself, Prince and Ebenezer. Shout out to Prince and Ebenezer. And I mean, it was just, man, like, I saw things that night that I didn't think was possible in comedy.
Yeah.
And yeah, man, it changed my life. That was my first paid gig, and then I was like, you know what? I'm actually cool with not getting paid for a while because it's a big responsibility. Because the thing is, when you're getting paid, they're putting value to your comedy. So
right,
like,
right.
They're
right.
giving you money because we know,
we know that
you're going to deliver. So here you go.
On.
Yes.
Whereas an open spot, it's like that bonus feature on the DVD.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yo, this
and
is
you can
good.
Be more experimental.
This, but it's nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Nick added funny on Sunday because he called them nuggets. Like, you know when you go to McDonald's and you buy like a 6-piece nugget?
Right.
And then you get to your car and you open it and it's a 7th piece. You're just like, yes, 7th. You're not going to take it back. You're like, fuck, this is an extra nugget. Thanks, God. High five. And that's
very,
it.
Very
so
cool. And I think, so I was thinking about this last night as well. Like, comedy is one of those industries where there's very low barrier to entry.
Mm.
Like, pretty much anyone can get into it.
100%.
But it's got a very low rate of people staying in or, like, continuing or being successful with it. It's one of those things that I think is quite...
Well, it's completely honest feedback.
Yeah.
That's the nice thing about it
justice,
as well.
Justice. It's like the ultimate form of justice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, you don't...
That and Sharia law. I mean, just one of those two. Yeah.
And also some of the guys, I mean, one thing that's great about comedy is everyone's so great. So you can have experienced guys, like I know for myself, Ryan Whittle, Dusty Rich, Ronnie Morimole, always help you out and stuff. So that's great as well.
Morimola, not the Morimole monster. although we must share that story sometime. Okay, cool. So it sounds like we've hit that part of the show where we have our
surprise
phone call. Although, because he just arrived and then we're phoning him at his hotel, I don't know how much of a surprise it is. So, hello and welcome to the Gas Comedy Show. We have Mr. Carl Joshua Ngube from Zimbabwe. How's it going, sir?
Good, thanks. I made it into the country legally, so it's cool.
They let you in this time. That's
yeah,
great.
They let me in this time.
I wonder if they'll let you back in Zim, though. That's the question.
You see, that's the thing. I'm not really concerned about that part.
Yeah, all right. Okay, so tell us, for those that don't know, tell us a bit about you. Who are you?
Okay, so I'm Carl Joshua Ngube, and I'm the biggest Zimbabwean stand-up comedian in the world.
Aye.
Yep.
Copyright.
I know. Basically, my job is to get bookings by convincing promoters that, you know, I'm going to tell Robert Mugabe jokes, and then I don't. So that's my, that's how I get in, really.
Because you value your life. Very
yeah,
smart,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm not dumb, you know. I'm not dumb.
But
and besides, I get a nice security briefing before I leave the country. So
oh, shit.
That's,
oh,
yeah.
Shit. But Carl, I think, you know, that's good. That's well and good. But you've obviously achieved and done something that most people can never say, and that you performed actually with Robert Mugabe present.
I know, eh?
Tell people
it was
about
weird
that.
Because he was, it looked like he was asleep the entire time.
Oh, shit.
But then when he woke up, he kept reciting stuff from my set.
Oh, shit. That's
so
lazy.
Yeah, but that means one of two things, though. It means he probably has the recording of one of my shows that he's been watching. I always have this, because there's one show that I did where the security guys came and put a mic on me and then recorded my entire show. So I always think this is part of Robert Mugabe's retirement plan to have a show that says Robert Mugabe presents Carl Joshua Ngube live.
Oh, shit. And
but, dude, it's an unreal experience because you're talking about a guy who's like a lot more witty than a lot of comics out there. So when he comes back and hits back at you, it's not one of the easiest things to roast him and then, you know, you have to wait for his reply. It feels like one of those, like, Comedy Central roasts.
Right.
Yeah, because I got it good after, because he started making
took shots at you, and he was like, oh, okay, the floodgates are open.
Exactly.
Unlike
exactly.
The Kariba Dam floodgates.
Yeah, that's like trying to, like, do a roast with Dylan Oliphant. You're not going to win.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult. It's a one-way road.
Okay, so tell us, so Carl, what are you doing in South Africa at the moment?
Okay, cool. So we're down for this... event called One Laugh by the Napster at the Lyric.
Yeah, we just
like
plugged
an,
that already.
Yeah an anti-xenophobia and anti-racism a gig.
Right.
But, you know, like being a Zimbabwean, that's also you never know when the word xenophobia is mentioned in a gig if you should attend. But, you know, so I thought I'd
if it's in Durban, Pascal, that's
don't go to Durban.
Exactly. And also one of the coolest things as well is I get to come and perform at the Goliath Comedy Club, which is, for me, really awesome because I was, like, you know, one of the first comics to get booked by the Goliath at one of their shows.
You performed at the very first show that they put together. That was their Wednesday,
exactly,
right?
That's the day I became a colored.
Blazing.
That's nice. You know, I'd never been a colored before. And this first day, I just, you know.
Carl, what do they call colored people in Zimbabwe?
Yeah, they call them colored people.
Whoa, that's nice. Yeah, so I can go there and feel at home. That's amazing.
Yeah, because if you're like half and half, if you're like half of two tribes, like half Shona, half Ndebele, that's also colored.
Right. Wow. Yeah. Look at that. Yeah. Diverse colored people. I love this.
All right. So awesome. So tonight you're going to be at the Lyric Theatre, and then Saturday and Sunday you're at the new Goliath Comedy Club out at
No, I'm actually at the Goliath Club after the Lyric Theatre.
As well. Okay.
Tonight and then Saturday. And then we've got some of the comics. This is the most interesting thing that's happened in comedy between the two countries now, because some of the comics that I'm performing with in South Africa are also coming down to Zimbabwe for like a new type of comedy at the festival called Haifa. So this is pretty like a historic time for comedy, because we're getting the same comics sort of performing across the Limpopo as well, which is awesome.
That's fantastic. That's really, really great stuff. All right. And then last thing, please tell us where people can follow you or find out more about you and your comedy.
Okay, cool. So you can catch me on my website, which is carljoshuanmube.com, or at carljoshuanmube on Twitter, and or just Google Zimcomic. No, I'm just kidding. so yeah, you can Google Carl Joshuanmube. Yeah. You'll find me out on
If you Google Zimcomic, Morgan Changira will pop up. All right, Carl, thank you very much. Lovely having you on the show. And I'm sure we'll catch you at one of your shows this weekend. And enjoy your time in South Africa. And great work. I like the idea of the exchange of comics between South Africa and Zim.
And also the exchange rate is really quite nice between the US dollar and the rand. And our currency is coming back, so... You know, like we want to make a lot of South African comics millionaires instantly. That's our prerogative.
Right.
Yeah, nice. We're going to take them there.
Thanks a lot, Carl.
Yeah. Cool. Awesome. Thank you so much, guys.
Great.
Cheers, man.
Awesome.
All right, so we've got a few minutes left, and I think we should play you a little bit more comedy. Again, this was taken from the Conan show. This was in October, late October last year. And this is a comedian I hadn't heard before, but it was so good, I think we have to play it. His name is Ahmed Barucha. Here we go.
Recently, outside of my house, I had a bunch of crows, 20, 30 crows, all in one tree, just cawing nonstop for about 2 days straight, just like, caw, 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 just day and night, nonstop, shaking the tree all at once. So finally, I called animal control, and I was like, hey, what the hell is going on with these birds? And they said, it's baby crow season. They're cawing at the baby crows until they learn to fly, and that can last up to 5 days. And I was like, what? That's the crow flight training program? That's how you teach the gift of flight? Just for 5 days. And it works. 5 days, they were gone. Tried it home on your kids. You've taken it too far with cows. We kill them, we eat them, we wear them. That's on par with most animals. But with cows, we also eat veal, which are their children. Then we drink their milk. It doesn't sound as bad, but it's the milk intended for their children we ate. We eat their babies, and then we eat their babies' food with cookies. Just dunking cookies in there, just a midnight snack. But then, on top of all of that, we take pictures of our missing children. Put it on their milk. hey, sorry for killing your kid. Haven't seen my kid, though. Have you? Really worried about my kid. Your kid's dead. Ate him. Washed him down with his own food. Keep a lookout for my kid. Turned 30 recently. Still can't figure out how to turn off ceiling fans. Can't do it. Go up to a ceiling fan. She's like, If I start listening for the noise, like, then I have to manually stop it. It's like, damn it. You come over to my house in the middle of winter, all the ceiling fans are on. It's like, hey man, can you turn off your ceiling fans? No, I can't, actually. That's why I brought you over. 3 clicks, 7, I don't know. I don't understand why refrigerator door ice machines are so loud. It's so embarrassing to cool your drink at someone else's house. Everyone's in the living room watching a movie, you go in the kitchen, it's just like... One ice cube, just one ice cube. I think like 3 or 4 more. Finally, just give up. You just open the freezer. There's just an already made pile of ice in there. What the hell is the noise? I thought it was at least making the ice. What's happening in there? Just a tiny robot just kicking around ice. Slide it down the tube. Found out there's people that don't believe in dinosaurs. And they think that the devil put dinosaur bones in the earth to trick us. Which is the lamest, nerdiest devil ever. He's just some science fiction nerd devil like, hey, Lucifer, what's on the agenda for tonight? Famine? Plague? Genocide? No. Actually, a much more diabolical scheme. I've created a prehistoric reptilian species. I'm going to take their bones and bury them deep down in the earth as to suggest an alternate timeline than in the Bible. And then we'll hope that one day someone comes along, digs them up, and questions God's existence. Huh? And if that doesn't work, we still have the gays.
That's blazing, man. That's
so that
blazing.
Was Ahmed Barucha taking from his 5-minute set on the Conan O'Brien show.
Shit, I need to watch more comedy.
Very cool.
I'm going to start doing that.
All right, so let's wrap things up. So I think if anything we took away from today, if anyone is thinking about starting stand-up comedy, go check out our website, www.gascomedy.co.za, and there you'll find a comprehensive nationwide country listing. Get down to a comedy show. Go watch some shows. Speak to the comedian. Speak to whoever's organizing the gig and get yourself a 5-minute open spot.
And then make it
happen. Do your prep and then make it happen, come through. Any final words, guys, before we wrap up?
This is nice that we have this podcast.
It's very distant. It's very different. I'm saying distant. Very different without
Dusty. In the future. It's different without Dusty.
We don't have that manic craziness. So any final parting words?
I'll work on it. I'll work on it from my side. I'll be more crazy next time if the need arises. Yeah. But from my side, I guess I can just say for myself and Sumi RF, we are saying away and things.
Wow. Okay. Dustin Moore?
I'm all good. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, thanks everyone for coming,
thanks for coming out. Dustin.
Yeah.
And in the words of the Dusty famous Rich, Dusty Rich, go fuck yourself.
This is CliffCentral.com.